always my validity being questioned, you know, by white people about rock and roll was pretty much my place in the situation. Always having to prove myself as to why I liked what I liked, you know. It wasn't until I was older and I realized like the actual role that black people had in the creation of it, you know.
Yo, what's good, y'all? How y'all feeling? Me? Oh, you asking me? I'm doing all right. I'm chilling. For those who are listening, thank you. I'm so glad that you're listening. And for those who are watching, what's good? It's good to see y'all. For those who don't know and those that are new, this is A Thorn in My Side podcast, and I'm the host, Asa Featherstone, the fourth. All right, so I'm not going to lie, y'all. Today's episode is pretty fire. I got to speak with Taz Muerte of Blaxploitation and Austin-based electro-futuristic punk band. Austin, Texas, that is. And we talk about his upbringing. We talk about his influences musically. We get an extensively brief lesson on punk music and its origins. How is it extensively brief? You just got to listen to find out. And then we also talk about once he got into the punk space, how he has to continuously legitimize himself as a real player. Oh, just a side note, there's some heavy topics towards the middle end of the episode where we talk about addiction and how Taz has been able to overcome it. It's very positive, but I wanted to give y'all a heads up in case you wanted to prepare yourself before you listen. So we recorded this video a while ago. I ain't even gonna hold y'all. It's been a minute, bro. So I think it was like last spring or summer in 2021. So some of the stuff that we talk about is like right around the vaccine rollout. So we talked about that a little bit. So just to give y'all context of where we were. And then also those who are watching the video, we had some issues with like the video feed on both of our ends. Again, it was like last year, so I was trying to figure out video. So there's not going to be really a feed for both of us except me sort of interjecting throughout the episode. But again, appreciate y'all listening. I ain't got nothing else to add. Let's just bounce into this thing. All right, Taz, man, what's going on?
You're chilling, G. What's up?
Doing the same, man. Just trying to stay safe, trying to stay as safe as I can, just because now that it's starting to get warmer over here, I'm in the Midwest, it's starting to warm up, so people are out here getting wild, trying to pace myself, because I want to be outside and around too, but also trying to make sure I stay safe in the process. So
where in the Midwest are you?
I'm in Ohio, so I'm in Cincinnati. I'm in like the Cincinnati, Kentucky border, so I'm almost the South for real. But you're in Austin too, right?
Yes, sir.
And you've been there for your whole life, or?
No, I've been here for about 14 years.
Okay.
I'm originally from New Mexico. I grew up in San Antonio. You know, my parents are military, so I lived in Germany in Zweibrücken. Came back to the States, lived in New Mexico. That's where I was born. Lived in Texas probably most of my life.
And did you end up learning the language and stuff too? Or did y'all kind of stay in y'all's like military pocket?
I lived like off base for the most of my stay when I lived there. So I went to a German public school, you know. There were other Americans that went to the school with me. But we just had, when you lived there, I mean, at least back then, you know, like you had to learn German. If you weren't from Germany, it was like mandatory. They wanted you to be able to speak. So I had to take German every Thursday. And as a kid, I remember speaking it a lot. Like I remember certain phrases and stuff now, but when I was a kid, I had to pretty much use German all the time. I had German homeboys and stuff like that. So, but a lot of it, I don't remember.
Yeah. Did you, have you gone back since?
No, I haven't been back, man. It's like a dream.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's like one of the best moments of my life is living, like growing up in Germany, man, for sure.
I never been to Germany, but like, what are some of the things that you kind of like want to revisit, or what were some of the things that were cool about it?
Well, you know, I was there during the 80s, so I got to see like a lot of things happen you know, like blow up there, like hip hop, you know, which a lot of people don't know, like hip hop really got one of its biggest pushes was like in Germany, you know, before the States really caught on. Like Rocksteady and them, they were already touring and shit, like in Germany, like making money before America actually, like Fab Five and them. But Germany was big on hip hop. So like seeing that happen, seeing like hearing Beastie Boys for the first time and watching Breakin' and all that stuff, man, like in Germany. And then there was music like, you know, like techno music and post-punk, like Joy Division and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Was just in the air at all times. And just seeing and hearing like Culture Club, Boy George and all that, like for the first time is like pretty much my childhood. And just being like, this is awesome. You know, breakdancing on cardboard with my friends, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine like being like experiencing that. Like you hear all the stories and stuff about people experiencing it here, like in like the New Yorks and stuff like that. But to be in a completely different country and kind of have like similar energies, but also with their own kind of twist on it as far as the way that they're receiving and they're receptive to that sort of that boom will be like really interesting to kind of see and be around.
Yeah, definitely. And like it's crazy because I just remember, you know, I have all these memories of just being treated really well, like everywhere I went, you know, like people were just really welcoming and really inquisitive and just real hospitable. And, you know, it was just awesome.
Yeah, you know? I feel that too. I mean, the few times that I have been, I haven't lived overseas, but the places I've traveled is definitely kind of feel a different energy as far as just being people being open and welcoming to just people in general. And so, yeah, I mean, I'd love to be anywhere like that for real. So when you came to the States and you were probably what in like your teenage years or so when you came here?
Yeah, I was just coming into. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you kind of notice any sort of like, what was that sort of shift like for you? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was hard, man. I noticed like people were mad materialistic, you know. I noticed school wasn't fun like at all, you know. Like growing up in Germany and going to school, like I felt like we were never in school. We were always outside of the school learning, you know. Like it was really hands-on. If we were gonna learn about fractions, they would take us to like you know how you have like a butcher and a bakery and then you have like a cheesery or whatever. Yeah, they take you there and they show you fractions, dividing up a wheel of cheese and you're tasting all this cheese. And
oh, wow, that's fire.
Just like different things, yeah, always out of school, field trips all the time, learning about the lesson. You know, sometimes you would maybe just go to a rose garden and you get your math lesson, you know, so school was just so much different. And I noticed in the States, school is like this thing where it felt like you're just being punished like all day, like it was a punishment, you know? Always teacher always looking to embarrass somebody, you know, right. Put someone on blast, holds another person up above everyone else, like this is who you need to be, you know. It was a hard transition. I just didn't understand like why people were so mean, you know.
Yeah, that's tough, man. I feel like that's such a good model. I mean, my mom is an educator. And so we talk about the education system all the time. Like we all know it's busted. Like, right. Especially, and it's so bad because it's like the foundation of people's entire lives. Like that's their entry to the world is like through school. Cause like we learn by experience and by doing, but for some reason we decided to just make it this like militant, just like sit in this chair for 8 hours and listen to someone lecture at you. And if you can't do that, then you're on punishment and you're, you know, it's like the dumbest thing ever. And especially because a lot of stuff that we, that students and things learn, like, you know, they don't apply it, especially for the States, at least, like they don't teach you stuff that's actually of value and applicable to what we're doing. Like, yeah, let me go to a cheesery and figure out if I want cheese this certain size, like what kind of fraction, like that's real application. Yeah. I'm not going to use no theory or whatever to solve any sort of problem right now. So It's right. the whole system is kind of busted, man. But so when you're here and you're kind of making this transition, it sounds like you've always kind of had like music ingrained in you. Like was there a specific moment in time where music was important to you, or like what was your introduction to that?
Well, my parents, both of my parents were super religious, you know. They're actually both pastors in this super, I guess, right-wing, like, kind of cult type. It's really, really very, very strict and very weird, you know. So, if anything, I was, like, really raised on a lot of church music, you know. When my mom was, I guess, you know, got married to her new husband, this was the new norm, church music all the time. Prior to that, you know, I'm hanging with my uncles, it was Soul Sonic Force, you know, mm-hmm. all day, every day, NWA, stuff like that. And so listening to music, it was something I really had to seek out and private, and it had to be very secret, you know. It happened whenever I left the house, I was searching for music, you know. I would go to, when I lived in Germany, there's this place called the AYA, which is American Youth Association, which, you know, I guess existed in the 80s and is basically like a youth center or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And there is where, like, you know, little did, you know, my mom know, that's, I was breakdancing there, my friends, the hip hop, whatever, punk, whatever, you know, watching movies, all the stuff I wasn't allowed to watch at home. There's no TV at home, you know, watching movies, all kinds of stuff. So it was basically like a mission, and having my friends put me on to music and making me mixtapes and me hiding them and stuff like that, you know.
Like, obviously, there was no tolerance for any kind of secular experience.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no tolerance, you know. It's like you listen to like a Jodeci song or something in secret, and you think, then you just lie in bed thinking, hoping God doesn't come back and you want to go to hell.
Right, man. Yeah. Dude, that's like, yeah. There's so many times you kind of hear that story, man. It's such a shame because I feel like that always happens. Like, you even think about, I think that's similar to like D'Angelo's story.
We got to pause for a second just for D'Angelo. Let's just appreciate everything that he is. My wife loves him. I love him. So for her, let's just take a moment to just appreciate all the music he got for us. Okay. All right, y'all.
Who kind of grew up in a church, and like a lot of those kind of like gospel influences which have been really good influences for him, he wasn't really allowed to kind of create or make waves outside of that. So he had to explore things on his own route. And people would, it's a shame because he has to kind of like, he had to rebel and go against his family. Like, his family was not in approvement of the way that he's, I don't know how they feel now, but how he was impacting the world, because it wasn't, you know, quote unquote, you know, glorifying God in like a very straight faced manner. And so I think like that's like a huge problem, I feel like, with a lot of churches. And, you know, I feel like they go the wrong route. Like, if y'all want people to really be about it, then like let them kind of make that decision. But like, don't shame them for wanting to explore, because like not everything that doesn't happen in the church is like Satan. Like, it doesn't work that way. But it's like, you see it so often where, you know, as soon as people go off to college who have been raised in the church or whatever, they just wild out because they never got the opportunity to do that. And it's just, it could be pretty tragic, man. I think it's like backwards thinking to me, but I don't know.
It is, man. And, you know, you just learn how to, you know, when it comes to music, and you're, I guess, unknowingly, when you're sneaking and you're listening to it, you're unknowingly doing something that people that are deeply involved in the church are already doing themselves. You know what I mean? Which is hiding what they're doing, you know, like, concealing what they're actually doing and saying one thing, you know. So unknowingly, as a youth, that's what you're doing. You're doing what your parents are doing. You're thinking they're perfect. Everyone in the church is perfect. They never listen to this. They never watch that. And it's actually the complete opposite. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, and then you get all these scandals with all these, you know, pastors and stuff like that. And these, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's just like there's so much dishonesty within that sort of realm that I think just needs to be explored a little bit more. And, you know, I don't know. It just changes. It's changed so many people's lives for that. I want to kind of, so thinking about your introduction to music, you're kind of exploring, like, when did you, like, did you always kind of have like an affinity towards like a certain genre, or were you kind of just open? And
I was always kind of, you know, I just always liked what I liked, you know what I mean? Like living on, growing up with family in the military, you come across all kinds of people that, you know, their parents in the military too. Have somebody's lived in Hawaii, someone's lived in Italy, someone's lived in England, you know, somebody may be, you know, parents are from Detroit, but, you know, got in the military. And so their parents put them on to different music, you know? So like early on, I was listening to everything, you know? Like I can remember the first time I heard like Motley Crue, and I was like, yo, what is this? And I remember, you know, listening to Tribe Called Quest, and it changed my life. You know, it was just, to me, whatever sounded good, I just liked, you know. I never really had a preference. You know, I started out in hip hop. I love hip hop, you know, but I just always liked my pawpaw, man, my grandpa, he listened to country music all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still listen to country to this day. He's, you know, he's gone now, but I still even listen to that, you know, when I'm in the mood. So
yeah, man, country and blues, man, people often forget, because like the way that people look at it now, it's like a white people's genre, but like,
yeah,
that originated from us. So we started it. So, you know, I think it sounds good. Like I actually like listening to it as well. So being around music so much, you said you started doing hip hop on your own.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, since I was a kid, all my homies, man, it was, you go through the different eras to see, you know, you have hip, you had breakdancing, that was hot. I wanted to breakdance, you know what I'm saying? You had skateboarding was hot. I wanted to do that, did that. You had everybody wanted to be a rapper, you know. Everyone wanted to have, after breakdance, everyone had like little dancing troops, because there were groups like The Boys and Another Bad Creation and Belle Biv DeVoe and all that stuff. So like, yeah, I always wanted to do what was hot, you know, like what my friends were doing. So always wanted to be like a rapper, you know. Always had drawn my name on a book covers at school, like, what, you know, trying to figure out what my rap name would be, and slowly just trying to study different groups and how to write. I remember the song Check the Rhyme by Tribe Called Quest. Just remember really listening to their flow pattern and then trying to figure out, okay, this is how they make a bar, and try to fill in different words they said, like take them out and put my own words in there, you know, just see like how it flow went. And like listen to that, like Cypress Hill and Lords of the Underground, Chief Rocka, you know, like listen to those songs and just trying to figure out how to write a rhyme. And as I, you know, later on in high school, I went to New Mexico and started going to high school there. And all my homies, you know, there's like a heavy West Coast influence there, you know? So I was listening to like E-40 and SIBO and Spice One and all these guys. And, you know, my homies, they were from Sacramento. That's who they listened to. And that's when I actually started writing rhymes with them and try to perform them, you know, at talent shows and stuff like that.
Now, how did this all kind of transition into you kind of going into the punk route?
Okay, when I came back from New Mexico, came back to Texas, I was going to school in the Northwest Side, San Antonio, which is a really diverse community. You know, you're gonna have gangbangers, you're gonna have B-boys, B-girls, you're gonna have metal dudes, you know, new wave cats, anti-racist skinheads, you know, like everything is there, you know. I was in an art class and I had this homeboy who was a sharp, skinheads against racial prejudice. That's what it stands for. I don't know if you're familiar with mm-hmm. them. But I had this homeboy Simon who was a sharp, and he would listen to like a lot of punk stuff, and he's like this Mexican cat from my neighborhood. And I was like, what do you listen to? And he was like, check this out. And I noticed that, you know, him and his friends, they weren't worried about the same shit I was worried about. You know, they were skating, hanging out, doing graffiti and stuff. You know, the people where I was running, I was trying to, you know, run away from gangbanging and stuff like that. I noticed that him and his friends, they had a good time. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get to know them a lot more. There was this girl that hung around them named Deborah, I believe her name was. And I would talk to her in art class all the time. And I was just like, yo, so what kind of music y'all listen to? She's like, oh, punk. And she's like, I'll make you a mixtape. I was like, word. So she made me a tape and started listening to it. I was like, all right. And then she'd give me tape after tape. And I would just start listening to these songs, you know, Minor Threat. I think one tape, she had like Orange 9mm on there. There's just different groups. I was just like, man, this is slapping, you know? And that's basically how I got into punk and learning something about it. And it wasn't until I was older and I realized like the actual role that Black people had in the creation of it, you know? I always thought I was like a weirdo, you know, hanging out with these white kids listening to punk music. I never knew until way later on the contribution that Black people actually made.
Oh, to is that it, for real? I didn't know that.
Yeah, didn't know that. Of course, I knew about bands like Bad Brains and stuff like that, but anything else, I didn't know. I didn't know about Death, you know. I didn't know about Pure Hell.
Huh.
Okay, y'all, hold on. Let's just pause for a moment because Taz is actually putting us on game right now. He's dropping a lot of heat. So for me, I knew about Bad Brains from just like growing up, seeing them around like skate shops. I would always like see their stickers or like people with shirts or, you know, you go to Hot Topic or something. But I never really took time to listen to their music. But I mean, this dude is talking about a lot of other dope bands like Death and Pure Hell. You hear some of it in the background, like, and to find out that they are all like Black punk groups, that's crazy to me. So anyway, like, I just wanted to stop and tell y'all that, but this, I just think that's wild.
A bunch of different bands, you know.
So did that, were they kind of contributing, oh my gosh, were they kind of making contributions to the kind of the origins and to the rise of the punk scene, or?
Definitely.
Okay.
You know, well, punk and hip hop, they're like first cousins, you know what I'm saying? Like they're very, very much the same thing. Was, you know, at one point, just using two different kind of mediums or whatever to create, you know, like a lot of those punk cats from a lot of bands coming out of New York City, you know, they were bombing trains like with graffiti, you know what I mean, doing burners on trains and then going and playing shows at CBGBs and stuff, you know, and a lot of cats that or hip hop, rocking the bubble vest and the ski goggles and stuff. You know, if you go back and look at all the old Bad Brains footage of them playing at CBGBs, you'll see like B-boys in the front row, you know, stage jive and stuff, you know? This was, it was just a subculture, you know, that was both were really brand new and they kind of coexisted at the same time being played, you know, they were both from the street and being played on the street, you know? And then you have bands like Death who were like proto-punk who basically at the time, you know, they didn't know they were making punk. They were trying to be like Led Zeppelin or something, you know?
Right, yeah.
They didn't know the sound they were making is the sound what later on other people would make and people would name punk, you know? Yeah, but those sounds in Pure Hell, you know, they were touring with Sex Pistols. They're out of Philadelphia. you know, killing shit. Like, and they were supposed to be the next big thing, you know?
Yeah.
There's just so many different people, yeah, that are involved, that are black or like not white, that were contributing to punk, you know?
I had no idea. So like, I had no idea about that. That's nuts. I need to like, I'm going to do some more digging on my own. Cause yeah, I always thought it like to me, and I'm sure like the greater community as well, like they felt like I would, for me, I would be like, oh, you're an anomaly because you're black and participating in the creation of punk music, but not understanding its origins. So before you had that knowledge, what was like, what did you feel your place or your position in that kind of world was?
I kind of like felt alone. I felt my position was kind of like a guest, you know, in the whole scene or whatever. I felt like a guest. Of course, you get weird looks when you come around. I would get a lot of questions about my musical knowledge. Not unlike anyone else, like people would just say, well, if you, you know, just trying to test me to see if I, what I really knew, you know what I mean? If I was really there because I liked it, just always my validity being questioned, you know, by white people about rock and roll was pretty much my place in the situation. Always having to prove myself as to why I liked what I liked, you know?
Dang, that's so tough, man. Cause that's like, that's how it is. I mean, it's how it that's how it is. I feel like with everything though, like if it's not, if it's outside of the social norms, like it's like, why can't we belong here as well? You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to have as much knowledge or even more knowledge of you. If I have an interest in this thing, let me rock it. Like, I see that. I see that all the time in like literally anything. But like, I mean, it's way less common now, but I mean, it was like that for me, as a skateboarder. I grew up skateboarding and, you know, people would quiz me or like, they would judge me based on like, I wasn't a real skateboarder unless I could do X amount of tricks or I was like in this scene or whatever. And I'm like, what for, man? I just love riding this thing. I just happened to be good at it, so I could prove myself. That's like one of the reasons why I had to get, like why I pushed myself to get better. But it's like, what, you know, what's the difference in me? What's the difference between me and you just liking the same thing? You enjoy it, I enjoy it too. That's the exact reason I'm doing it. Not necessarily because I'm trying to like, you know, do whatever, but yeah, it's just the same because I hear and see that a lot, you know, that's so just like tiring. Like, why can't you just enjoy your music? And if you want to create that type of music, go ahead, bro. Go ahead. Who cares, man?
Exactly. That's why I'm just not into like pressing people, you know, when it comes to like them liking something, because you can like whatever you want to like, you know what I'm saying? Like, as long as like when you're coming into to whatever you're trying to do, like you're coming with a genuine appreciation and you're coming there as a student, you know, first. And to have fun is what is important to me. You know, there's people who do this thing where they talk about music with someone else, like say at a party or a bar or whatever, and someone's standing there and they look at them like they don't belong there and they ask them questions. Like if you say you like something, you're like, well, do you know what was the blah, blah, blah. You know, the first album, who was the engineer, you know, and then like, oh, so, you know, see, kid, this is like, you know, I don't do that.
So something that comes to mind for me in my life is definitely the anime community. Yo, the gatekeepers are so annoying, bro. It's like now that things are like mainstream, there's like an influx of just like a bunch of new people who are just excited about animation, the style, the stories and everything. It's so funny because like one of the first things that happens when you tell someone that you like anime, they start quizzing you on like, what's your favorite anime? Who's your favorite character? What's your favorite studio? And it's like, if you don't give someone the answer that they think you should have, or if your favorite anime isn't their favorite anime, or if it's not like a deep cut and it just happens to be like a mainstream anime, you're like all of a sudden not an anime fan. And as a fan who's sort of part of this, in the community at least, like that is disgusting, y'all.
can we get people to just love stuff and just enjoy it? Like, how are we going to get people to enjoy their stuff, enjoy this community, if you're just going to shut them out at first glance? Do y'all have stuff like that in y'all's community too, that there's these weird gatekeepers that just like sort of ruin the experience for y'all?
And like, that's just the corniest freaking thing you can do, because like, you don't own it. You don't own anything. You know what I mean? You can't somebody what to like. I don't care what race they are, what gender, whatever. You know what I'm saying? You can like whatever you want to like. You know what I'm saying? As long as you're coming there with a genuine love and desire to be a part of something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I think you're right on. And you said something important about kind of just being a student and a sponge, like just being willing to understand. Like, I mean, one of the reasons that you kind of go into this thing is to learn more about it because you're interested in it. So like, yeah. who comes in an expert? Like, nobody does.
No one.
Yeah. And so we're just like, that's what I notice about so many things, so many people. It's like, we're just so quick to judge. And for what reason? Like, what does it do to me if I school you on your knowledge of punk music and you get discouraged? Now what does that do for myself? Come on.
Right.
Man. Come on.
Mm-hmm. You end up losing an ally or a friend or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But did you ever see that, like, that narrative or those conversations shift once you started performing?
Not so much. Yes and no. You know what I'm saying? It got really weird because as far as punk is concerned, we started playing. Then it was like people trying to say, well, you guys are cool, but is it punk though? You know, because I was using a Roland SPD-SX, which is like a performance drum machine, as you know, you play with drumsticks or whatever.
We didn't have a lot. Yeah, it looks pretty, it looks fresh.
Yeah, it's dope, man. Now everybody does that. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, you see every drummer has one on the side. You'll see bands with just somebody having one of those, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No other kind of percussion. It's just like, we did that. But I got the person that inspired me to do that was Shannon from like a dark wave dance group called Light Asylum. Okay. You know? And I saw they are the lead that plays the Roland SPSX. They are a black person. And seeing someone, it's a two-piece. I guess the guy who plays synth is a guy named Raphael Radna, at least was in this group when I saw them. But I saw like this person play that SPSX in front of everybody and just had the whole place like moving. And I was like, standing next to my homie Kati, who I founded a band with, I was like, yo, that's ill. See, that's what I want to do. And then Kati was like, well, I got one of those. You know what I mean? And I was like, what? And that was like the birth of Blaxploitation. Seeing Light Asylum perform in one of those. And I saw that they could rock a whole crowd with that. And see, like, I'm a drummer. And one of the things I hate about being a drummer is like having to carry all that freaking equipment.
Seriously.
With you, load it up. Like, you break it down at home, load it up, pull into the venue, unload it, set it up, and then repeat all over again. Everyone, you know, they want to go talk to the guitar player, and bass player, whoever, keys, and the drummer is just sitting there breaking down all this equipment, stacking it up against the wall in a crowded venue, and staring at it the whole time, hoping someone doesn't run off with your kick pedal or something, you know, or bag of cymbals. Yeah. So when I saw you could just have this little thing, I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do, you know. But that's having awesome. That, people would say, are y'all really a punk band because you're bringing it? So we came up with the term like electro punk or like future punk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But people still kind of question the validity of us being punks, you know.
Yeah, that's so interesting, so, man. Cause like, if the sound is there, the sound is there. Who cares how they made it? Like, people talk about that with, you know, like there's some, you know, there's music snobs who even like, question the fabrication of hip hop music because it's all digitized. And they're like, they're not using real instruments. Like, I would get in debates with some friends like a few like years ago about the authenticity of music as hip hop. And I'm like, nah, man, do you hear this? The sound's still coming through. Who cares how you made it? Like, they're, you know, I'm sure if they had the technology 30 years ago, they'd be using it then too. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So, sounds there. And I think y'all sound sweet. I mean, listening to y'all stuff, like, it feels like, I feel the punk, like, it sounds punk, but there's also like a nice, like you say, like future kind of electro style to it that has like a different rhythm that I think is really, that can draw a lot of people in. It's dope.
Thanks. Yeah, I think that the music, you know, especially in like hip hop and punk, is like, if you listen, if you go back to the beginning and until now, like, one thing that is like undeniable and unstoppable is change, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. evolution. It's gonna happen with or without you, you know, if you feel me? So it's like, I remember like listening to Dos Effex for the first time, let my uncle hear it, who I told you listened to like Soul Sonic Force and, you know, Afrika Bambaata and all, you know, yeah. like disco type hip hop, you know, mm-hmm. and him listening to Dos Effex, they're like, bump stickity, bump stickity, bump. He was like, what is this? You're like, this is a hip, you know? Or listening to Boogie Monsters, like, like, he was like, what is this? Like, this is not, and I'm like, this is hot. This yeah. is like Wu-Tang, and there's swords going off, and people like my uncle, like, they didn't understand it. And then later on, he got it then, but it didn't matter if he didn't understand it. You feel me? Like, mm-hmm. hip hop is always moving. You know what I mean? Neither, if you don't sit back and try to appreciate something about the new evolution, and all you do is just become antiquated. You know what I mean? You become angry, old ass person talking about back in my day. And that's one thing I refuse to do is like, say, well, back in my day, you know, hip hop was this, it was show toes and it was breakdown and graffiti and all, man. Yo, that was then. These kids ain't trying to hear none of that.
No, sir. You understand?
And this is their time. You feel me? And all you can do is you can just, you know, basically you can like it or you can just eat your big ass biscuit and shut up.
Right.
You know, I like to congratulate people and I like to encourage people. You feel me? And I ain't going to act like I ain't ever been a hater because I have. You feel me? Like, been like, that ain't hip. But as you get older, and another thing is, you know, I got away from like hating on music just to hate on it. You know, like when you're a professional and you're working in studios and you start seeing how much work goes into like recording and making a song, getting mixed and mastered and mm-hmm. sending it off here and then getting that, like, yo, that's a lot of work. Like, it's really insensitive to like hate on people's art when once you learn like how much work goes into it. If it's not my cup of tea, I just shut up. Exactly. You know what I mean? I don't go online, I don't say anything about it, you know? If you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. You feel me?
It still rings true. I mean, I think in the era what we're in with Twitter and everything, like, people have for some reason just gotten felt like their every thought matters. And sometimes you just don't got to say nothing. Like, you don't have to say anything about everything. So, yeah, man, I agree with that 100%, man. So where the name even come from? Like, Blaxploitation and like that. It's very specific the way that you kind of spell it and have it written out as well.
Well, if I remember correctly, I think it was the OG member Kati came up with the name Blaxploitation. I remember her and them and Jonathan were going back and forth about what we would be called. And it was black this, black that, you know, black animals, black birds, black this, and everything I was saying was like not black. It was like, I think like bloody touchscreens, just rows, I think, was like rows and rows of coffins or something. It's like crazy, crazy names, you know? And I think Kati said Blaxploitation, and Jonathan was like, yeah. And then I was like, no. And then, yeah. And I was like, all right, you know? And it wasn't, I think I didn't want the name because it was like after a movie genre, and I thought it might confuse people, you know, but it didn't turn out that way.
Okay.
I'm glad I listened to them.
Yeah. I think it's a solid name. Were you trying to stay away from the Black with the names that you were trying to put together, or was that something that you guys kind of wanted to make apparent?
Well, it wasn't because we were Black people, you know, already. It was because at the time there were already a lot of bands that were Black. So there was like the Black Keys and who was the other one? Black Lips, and you know what I mean? That were becoming like really popular. And I just didn't want to be like, you know, one of those bands. But see, where you come about, when you ask me about the acronym and being BLXPLTN, that was also like a trendy thing other bands were doing, was, I guess, removing the vowels from it. And so we did do that. We thought it was easier to spell, it was quicker, it looked better, you know?
Yeah,
so... Yeah, I just wanted to avoid being sound like having a name like those other bands, you know.
So, like in terms of creation of the music, and you guys are performing and things of that nature, and you guys are, you know, kind of doing media and stuff like that. I just want to get your perspective, man. Like, so as far as the narrative of your group, like how much of it, like, is it about you being Black versus it being about the music? Like, you, I know what you want it to be, but what is it currently? Like, when people are asking questions about it or seeing you, like, you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It just seems like I really, at first, you know, me and Kati were writing songs, there were really like a lot of like heartbreak stuff, you know, about being basically like punk, queer punk, punk of color, and just like experiencing, like, you know, things like everyone else, just from like a Black perspective, you know. Kati is, you know, Afro-Rican, she's born in Puerto Rico, you know. I'm Black American, like, live here in the States, abroad, whatever. We've gone through these different things, and it was just about, you know, just saying like, hey, we're punks too, but here's a Black version of what we've been through, you know what I mean? Here's a Afro-Rican, Kati's, and like point of like what I'm going through is queer, you know, and having these, and then it just seemed like there's this turn of events that were like awful, like one after the other. There was Trayvon Martin, you know, like one after the other, boom, 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 like we're just getting like snuffed out. And so you take that on top of everything else we're already feeling about kind of being marginalized in this genre, you know, and the way we were treated. And then you see like people getting mad about the way cops in the establishment is treating Black people. And we're like, hey, hold up. Like, this is what we're talking about, you know, like, and then we start focusing on that. Like, oh, you want to hear something fucked up? Well, check this out, you know, like started talking about it. And then it just seemed like whenever we had an interview, that's what people asked about, or there was just a new death or something that affected us where we had to sing about it or talk about it in an interview. And that just became like our bag, like being political. You know, we didn't start out in the beginning as like aiming to be political. We were just trying to be seen, you know, as people of color doing punk. You know, it was just the world around us is what, you know.
You just responded to it.
Yeah, and this defensive position dance, you know.
Do you think that now, like, you know, now that that's kind of been your bag as of recently, do you feel like you kind of have to stay in that lane, or do you feel like you have the freedom to kind of do, or is this the lane that you want to be in?
That's kind of a hard question because I really don't look like, it's not really a lane, you feel me? It's like we're a race car and like, this is the track we're on. Like this is what the track that we're all on, man.
Yeah, I feel it.
We're trying to go somewhere, but you're not leaving the track. You know what I mean? Like you may hit a curb on the track and you may see a city outside the track that you would like to drive to, but you ain't going there. You're going to go round and round in a circle because like those are the lanes. That's what they're putting you in. This is life. There's no way like I wouldn't even know how to talk about anything else. You feel me? The world is just so effed up, you know, that no matter what I'm talking about, somehow, some way, like what's going on is going to be put inside there, you know, because it's, you know, it's just how we write. It's how I write and talk about what's going on, what's affecting me, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I never tried. I think if I try to talk about, what would I talk about?
Yeah, man.
Corny, you know, unless like Pixar like called me up and was like, we need to talk about a toy or something, you know?
Yeah.
I probably still put something weird in there, like, but I don't know. Like,
yeah. Some like, you know, Will Smith type music, but.
Yeah. Man, my friends would never let me like do something like that. They'd like, you know, you've been through way too much stuff to act like nothing's going on. You know, I know people and I see some stuff where I'm like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like some of the corniest stuff. Like, I'm like, no, and they've been through way too much to be doing what they're doing. But you feel me? Like,
yeah.
Trauma affects us all differently. You know what I mean? Right. So people deal with it differently.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, cause part of that, like, because I feel you 100, but at the same time, I almost like can't blame somebody from going off doing that thing, because this stuff hurts on the inside, and it's like it gets exhausting, and sometimes you're just like, man, I'm not trying to do this today, you know what I mean? So like you're saying, people just kind of handle trauma in different ways. So like if you're going to try to go and do something corny over there because you need a breather, you need a break, that's cool. Yeah. Man, like, just,
yeah, I understand. Yeah. So, I definitely. And that's good you brought that up, because like it may be harsh. It is harsh of me to say it's corny, you know. Maybe I should say I wish it, if they were doing it, they would be doing it better. But as far as it being talking about, you know, current events and how they affect you and stuff like that, it is, like you said, it's a real downer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's depressing. And a lot of times, with this band and with OG members like Kati and John, a lot of times like talking about the stuff we were talking about and then we wouldn't even have time to deal with each other. You feel me? Like,
right.
See how we're doing with each other. Are like, are you good? Are we good? Like because we're worried about everyone else that they're good. You know, we get messages in with people saying, I'm going through this and your song da 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 da, and you're worried about them, you know, trying to uplift them, say something positive, and you're not even worried about yourself or each other, you know? And so I think in that aspect, we probably didn't take care of each other as well as we should have and ask if we were okay and how we were dealing with it. And a lot of times, you know, the pressure comes down when you make political music or something like, oh, okay, like, You didn't tweet about this, or you didn't post this about so-and-so. Are you really down? You must not really be down. Blah, 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 blah. You know, because like all the shit now is like mad performative. You know what I mean? Like, someone gets whacked. You got, okay, I got to make this post by blah, blah, blah about so-and-so. You know, it's just mad performative, and the pressure on top of actually really feeling the shit and not having, knowing what to say. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Having that pressure on top of people feeling like you should say something is like, it can lead to a lot of self-destructive behavior, like which happened to me, you know, like yesterday I'm 2 years sober from drugs and alcohol.
Congratulations, man. That's a big deal.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. That means a lot. And what happened was, is that I already had, you know, issues growing up. And when it came to playing music and talking about what was going on and how it's affecting different people, like, what I didn't realize is that I had a lot of shit that with myself that I should have dealt with before I tried to take on, like, the world, you know what I mean? Because that, the trauma that I was already experiencing was just set me up for failure. And what happened was, is instead of dealing with those problems and my anxiety, you know, I self-medicated with alcohol, you know what I mean? And it got to the point to where I really didn't know what I was talking about anymore and why, you know? Mm. I had to take a long break. So I understand when people, they want to be happy, you know what I'm saying? I understand that.
Yeah, man, that's tough, man. And I think, like, you're speaking on this world that we're in now where, yeah, there's just, like, unreasonable levels of pressure for people to, yeah, like we said earlier, just to say something, even if we don't even have the words, and if we don't speak up, then we aren't down. Like, that's so whack. And to have that, like, that sort of pressure added on top of going through whatever the thing is that you're supposed to be talking about is like, it's just, I don't understand how we can have such unreasonable expectations for other people. But you know, we do have to prioritize in those times. We got to prioritize, like you said, prioritize our own health and our own well-being. And given that we've been in, like, this time, this pandemic season era, do you feel like you've been able to do that, even though all this other stuff is still going on?
Definitely. It's crazy. Like, right when the pandemic popped off, I was pretty much like nearly a year into being sober from alcohol and drugs, you know? So I felt like, wow, like, man, I must have, it was like I had already went through the boot camp to go through what I was about to go through with the pandemic, you feel me?
Yeah.
If I had not taken that, decided that I was going to do something about my mental health and my addiction just a year, like, prior to it happening, I probably wouldn't be sitting right. I'd probably be fucking dead right now. You feel me? Like, because no one could go anywhere or do anything. So I know, like, I kept alcohol, you know, on deck. You know what I mean? Like, right. I would make sure I never ran out. I'd deliver it to my house. You know what I mean? Like, every day, stocked. And, you know, drugs, forget about it, you know? So I think being in a pandemic situation with that kind of addiction and bad mental health, you know, I think something really bad would have happened to me. You feel me? I think, so when I went into it, basically sobering up, it gave me a lot of time that I needed to address my mental health, you know, to really get some wind in my sail, as you would say, like when it came to my sobriety, because at the time I still wanted to drink, you know, use drugs. It gave me time to really evaluate myself and my relationships with people. And it gave me time to, because when it came to creating, and I was sober, I swear, like, I didn't know how to even use my equipment anymore, you know? It was like I had to, like, learn how to speak and how to walk again type shit, because I was so used to moving around inebriated, you know what I'm saying? You have, like, shaking and stuff, and everything's blurry. You get really frustrated with stuff when it's not working, you know? So it really gave me time to really, you know, get my legs back about how I approached music and how I enjoyed it. I couldn't even, for a while, I couldn't even listen to certain songs and stuff like that because they would trigger, you know, my addiction, you know? Mm-hmm. So a lot of it that I used to enjoy, I couldn't even listen to it anymore. And so it gave me time to really heal that side of myself to where now I listen to it all the time. You know, now I'm good now. But that's, I guess that's one positive thing the pandemic did for me, was help me get my house in order when it came to my mental health, my addiction, and even becoming a better musician. I had more time to practice. I had more time to write songs, you know. A lot of times you get under pressure when you know, with release dates and drop dates, and you end up releasing things before they're finished, you know, you don't feel 100% about the things that you release because you have this pressure on just staying relative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Dude, that's like, I mean, that really is like a blessing then. I guess the pandemic kind of came at a, you know, for better or for worse, it came at a decent time in terms of you trying to, yeah, just kind of build your foundation, rebuild it again, and kind of relearn how to do the things you love without the extra substances. And so, like, I mean, again, like that's like a huge deal. And like, I'm super hyped for you, man. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. So I kind of have like two last things I wanted to kind of ask you about. So one, I wanted to talk a little bit about, is there a new project that you're starting or under a new name?
So we cut out the part of the conversation where he sort of introduces a new collaboration he's working on called Money. So the work hadn't been released yet at the time of our recording, but since they've released a few videos that I will also link in the show notes, but for the purpose of this conversation and keeping the integrity of confidentiality, we're just going to cut it out. But if you want to find out what he's working on in that term, then just check out the links in the description.
And I have my other stuff, A Boy, from my solo stuff, which is like the dark wave things that I had to kind of put off for a second because I started going through sobriety right through the middle of that whole project. But I still have a lot of songs that I haven't released, and you'll probably see those probably this fall. Yeah.
Okay, cool, man. So kind of getting back into the mix this year, man. I'm excited for it.
Definitely. Now things are loosening up, and I got my first vaccine shot. I got my second one. I think the band is probably on the same wave as me. I think they all need one more shot too, so we'll be able to play in venues and travel and stuff like that. So, yeah, man, we're just, now things are loosening up.
And then one more thing I kind of want to check in with you with is, you may not even have an answer for this. I don't even know if I do. But, you know, your music is very, like we talked about it, it's very... I call it poetic because it's current and it's talking about the things that we kind of go through, like we described earlier. And you're very aware, and sometimes it's politicized about the state of our country and even the world at large. What do you kind of like expect or anticipate? Like, what is like your hope for, let's just say, like America? Like, what's next for us now that we've kind of transitioned? We're still trying to figure out this post-Trump era, but because it might not even be completely over, but who knows? But what is kind of like something that you're kind of looking forward to or hopeful about with us?
I just hope that, one, I mean, the stimulus is nice. So I had money hit my account, man. I was like, hey, yo, I've been just... busting my ass trying to keep up with my child support and make sure that that's not an issue. As a, you know, being a musician, trying to make money has been so hard.
Yeah.
That money was nice to get, and it makes me think about reparations and like how nice it would be to look in your account and see they put another rack in there every month. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
Until I die, and then my kids and then their kids until, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You feel me? I would like to see reparations be a real thing, you know? But I think when I talk about, you know, reparations, I think you also would have to talk about Native American sovereignty. And like, if you know, really wouldn't feel right getting reparations without Native people getting theirs too. And what I mean by theirs, you know, you can't use the word give. Mm-hmm. Because it was not yours, a give, I would say a return, you know, a lot of land, or the land, you know what I mean? back to Native people, making Native people sovereign citizens, like where they, a thing where they have like diplomatic immunity, where they shouldn't have to face our courts. You know, we should not be able to put them in our system, in our jail system, and so like this government that we have, I believe, should not be allowed to have any kind of reign over Native peoples in this country. So, and this is Native people in the whole diaspora. You know what I mean? Because anybody, whether you're in Mexico all the way down to the tip of South America, you know what I mean? Like your ancestors are Native peoples. You know, no matter what kind of lines they've drawn on the map or who they your last name is, you know what I mean? Like this is we're all visitors here, you feel me? I would like to see some real action happen where it comes to righting the wrongs we've done against my people, against Native people, and helping people at the border that are trying to come here and live a good life and just be a regular motherfucker, man. That's all people want. Like
that's it. That's all, man.
I don't get why it's so fucking hard. You know? like what the fuck? Like just motherfuckers just wanna come just be regular ass motherfuckers, man. You know what I'm saying? Like why don't you just let people just come here and have a life? You feel me? So I would like to see us follow through who we say we are with people.
Yeah, you know come on now. Yeah, man, I'm with you. I agree 100%, man. I appreciate that.
And my people's in Hawaii too, man.
Yeah, you don't forget about Hawaii, man. They out there.
Yeah, all my ohana out there, same thing. Mm-hmm. You feel me?
So before we officially go, I have a couple of quick hitters. They're like little fun questions to kind of get us to send us on our way to kind of bring the mood up a little bit. So the first question is, since we've been in a pandemic, we've kind of been locked down. If you could be anywhere in the world right now, where would you want to be?
I'd be anywhere in the world right now. I'd probably, if it's not in like in Ghana or somewhere, you know, I hope that by the time I'm like 50, I'm living in Ghana, you know what I mean? And for the rest of my life, you know? But I would like to be there or in my second home in Hawaii on Kauai, man, with my ohana, lower underground, with my homies. That's where I would like to be, just hanging out there, man.
Amazing. So what moment from your lifetime, if any, would you want to relive?
Probably playing Afro Punk for the first time in Brooklyn.
What year was that?
I think that was probably 20, could be 15 or 16.
Dang, I bet that was live.
It was.
If you weren't a musician, what would you be doing?
Probably. I'd be working in the fashion industry. That was my job before.
Oh, really? I
started doing music, yeah.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah. In the military.
Okay. And then last one is if you could, you know, have a conversation or chill, hang out with any five musicians from any era, any time, what five would you want to bring on?
Man, have a conversation with them?
Yeah, they'd all kind of be together, you know, kind of like that round table question, like y'all chilling together.
Oh, man. Favorite rapper is Big Pun. Mm-hmm. So probably Pun, Eazy-E, Five Dog, Bowie, and Prince.
Oh, that's a great combo. I like that actually. I love that, man. That's dope. Well, man, that's it, man. I appreciate you being willing to have this conversation. There's like, I think we covered a ton here. So this has been great. Thanks so much, man.
Word up, man. Anytime.
And I hope that vaccine second time around is much easier for you.
They say it's supposed to be much worse, but I'm a do the damn thing. So I can stage dive and get out there with the people.
Yeah, man, we missed that for real. We needed it.
Yo, Taz has such a good story, doesn't he? I really appreciated that, man. That was a really dope conversation. And I'm glad we're able to have it, and I'm glad that y'all were able to listen. I hope that y'all are going to click the links and find some new stuff and discover just a new part of a world or a culture, a subculture that maybe you don't know that much about, but has been existing for years and years and years. Just go ahead and just, you know, take some time to do some digging. Yeah, again, I just want to give y'all a huge shout out just for always sticking with me. If you want to be a guest, or if you know some other folks who want to be a guest, my door is wide open. Just hit me up. Email me or hit me up on Instagram. Instagram is TimsPod, TimsPod. And you could just email me at whatsupasa@gmail.com. whatsupasa@gmail.com. Also, links will be in the description. If you are watching this video, like and subscribe, please. We're trying to get some more views. We're trying to get some sponsors. All of these things. We're trying to grow. So, quick update. Next week, I don't believe I'll have an episode. The following week, I'll have a little announcement about where the podcast is heading, since we're a couple episodes into the season now. And then you guys will have another vision into what I'm planning. So, again, I'm still looking for editors. Anybody, just reach out, please let me know if you're interested. And I think that's it. So I'll catch y'all next time. But before I go, just gotta let you know, none of us have any idea what we're doing. We just become better actors. And with that, I pray that y'all stay safe. Peace.